and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Donald Trump's new campaign pledge says if elected, he'll make in vitro fertility treatments free. No specifics on how it would be paid for. Most Americans say Kamala Harris will accept the outcome of the 2024 presidential election. What about former President Trump? ABC's Selena Wang.
In a new ABC News Ipsos poll, it finds that only 29% say that Trump is prepared to accept the outcome of this election. But Trump's election denialism also resonates with some voters. Despite there being no evidence of widespread voter fraud, 1 in 3 say they are not confident that votes will be accurately counted in this election.
The government this morning reporting consumer prices rose just 2% from June to July and remained low last month. Compared with a year earlier, inflation remains the same at 2.5%. NHL player Johnny Gaudreau killed Thursday night in New Jersey while riding a bicycle by an alleged drunk driver. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump reiterating his support for in vitro fertilization at a town hall event last night in La Crosse.
The government is going to pay for it, or we're going to get or mandate your insurance company to pay for it, which is going to be great.
But Civic Media political editor Dan Schaefer says Trump missed an opportunity by not elaborating.
And he started, you know, talking about his position on no taxes on tips and talking about Social Security and talking about illegal immigration.
It was Trump's first time in Wisconsin since the Republican convention in Milwaukee last month. President Biden plans to talk about the economy when he visits Southwest Wisconsin next week. That's all we know so far. It's Biden's first trip to Wisconsin since he decided to end his reelection campaign. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Duluth Public Schools say new data shows their students have continued to improve their standardized test scores. According to a Northern News Now report, the organization released the assessment results for reading, math, science, and consistent attendance this week, which showed they have exceeded state averages. The biggest gap was in science, where Duluth students surpassed the average state score by about 11%. The district also says it saw an overall increase in attendance from their students last year. The Bayfield County Board voted to oppose Congressman Tom Tiffany's proposal to make the Apostle Islands a national park on Tuesday. According to a Northern News Now report, local officials criticized Congressman Tiffany for not coordinating the move with them and allowing for public feedback before introducing the proposal. They say the change would limit hunting opportunities and does not focus on the county's need to diversify its economy. Congressman Tiffany said his office remains open to public input on the legislation. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers blank the Giants. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports. Milwaukee's Aaron Civale and Aaron Ashby combined for a two-hit shutout to give the Brewers a series win over San Francisco. Manager Pat Murphy said the Brewers have been exceeding expectations.
This team is, as soon as you think they're, I don't know about this club. They don't have this guy. Who's this guy? They don't have enough of this. They don't have enough of that. They got enough of something.
The Brewers piled up 8 hits in the 6-0 victory. Now the Brewers turn the page to a doubleheader Friday against the Cincinnati Reds in Ohio, where temperatures are expected to be around 100 degrees. The Wisconsin Badgers kick off their football season tonight against Western Kentucky at 8 p.m. It's the second year of the Luke Fickell era after going 7-6 a year ago. You can hear the Badgers tonight on our Civic Media stations WRJN, WRCE, WFHR, and WLAK, or on the free Civic Media app. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
We are headed into an absolutely fantastic Labor Day weekend today. Sunshine, upper 70s this afternoon, tonight into the mid-50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, low 80s, and then sunshine, highs in the low to mid-70s on Sunday and Labor Day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
2 hours ago, Kyle arrived at the bar.
Hey, what's everyone drinking?
30 minutes ago, Kyle got his friends another round of drinks.
Cheers!
5 minutes ago, Kyle decided to drive home drunk. A minute ago, a law enforcement officer pulled up behind Kyle.
Sir, have you been drinking tonight?
A chain of events that began 2 hours ago is about to change Kyle's whole world. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Paid for by Wisconsin DOT.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter was killed in the Parkland shooting, joins me next. We'll talk about why Derek Van Orten is unfit to serve another term in U.S. Congress.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Come gather round, children, it's high time you learned about a hero named Homer and a devil named Burns. We'll march till we drop, the girls and the fellas. We'll fight till the death or else fold like umbrellas.
Ah, this is the life.
Smithers, get me some strike breakers, the kind they had in the 30s.
Strike breakers like they had in the 50s. All right, that's The Simpsons. I know that.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you know, it's Labor Day. And so we would be remiss. I'm glad we're on this subject again. I'm going to be at Labor Fest with a contingent of, civic media supporters. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking with people who are still in unions and and families who are living that middle class dream today, as many others, dreams have been dashed. So, Sandy, here's an article in today's Wall Street Journal, and it says bosses are finding ways to pay workers less. After a tumble in pay for white-collar job openings, wages for new hires in many blue-collar sectors are now falling. And it basically says, let me read a quick paragraph, bosses are quietly trying to reset worker pay levels, saying the era of overpaying for talent is over. Pay for many white-collar recruits shrank last year, and now wages for new hires in construction, manufacturing, food, and other blue-collar sectors appear to be ebbing too, according to the analysis of millions of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter. Job seekers report seeing roles that once offered salaries between $175,000 and $200,000 a year ago, now being advertised for tens of thousands of dollars less, a change that has them rethinking their pay expectations. And so the push to reset employee salaries reflects a power shift in the cooling hiring market. Employers have more choices of who they can hire and at what pay level, and are questioning whether they really need star hires when a workhorse will do. Even hourly jobs that were until recently the toughest for employers to fill are being advertised at lower pay than a year ago, as are some professional roles, according to business leaders and recruiters. Well, so, Sandy, I would ask you.
Yeah. Let me just say.
Go ahead.
That Wall Street Journal article is aimed at families that are living above the median, okay? All of that is a talk about, the trades jobs that might be, whether the trades industry is experiencing a cooling in terms of having enough work supply so they don't have to pay bonuses or don't have to increase the wages as rapidly as they were is an issue that is different than the issue faced by the median families in the United States.
Well, Sandy, I have to interrupt you for a second because it covers more than that. Among listings for more than 20,000 different job titles on the ZipRecruiter.com this year. Sectors including retail, agriculture, transportation, and warehousing, manufacturing, food, all registered drops in average posted pay. The biggest was retail, where average wages advertised for new hires is down 55.9%. Agriculture, 24%. Manufacturing, 17%.
Well, we got to be careful with what they're looking at, because if you look at macro numbers, real wages are going up, okay, and not down. But in some industries, there were shortages, and during the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic with the pent up demand for product, there was a real burst of requirements for employees that wasn't being matched by the employees who were there available to work. And we found employers paying bonuses, doing all kinds of things to try to avoid increasing annual salaries, but to attract workers. And it could well be that bubble has burst, that there no longer is that pent-up demand. But if we want to get real about changing the architecture of the economy and dealing with the problems dealt with by median families, we have to go further than this discussion by the Wall Street Journal. The people who have that problem are in a different category. What we're talking about really are a bunch of workers who are working at for wages that are not living wages. Okay, if you cut a living wage should be defined as something close to the median income for families.
So wouldn't that include retail?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what aspect of retail they're cutting the wages for. There's plenty of retail workers who are working. Of having a substantial workers working on an hourly basis.
So, Cindy, that's out of control of the American worker who's impacted by that. Well, so who's going to do that? Where's the pressure going to come?
In the past, unions saw this.
I know, but we've got a lack of unions.
Well, yeah, and I think there might well be a movement now in the direction of unionization because – for instance, a local coffee house, Colectivo, I remember when they unionized, right. And that was a coffee house unionizing. And I think that there might well be a shift in the direction of workers moving in the direction of trying to develop more leverage. Because the fact is that too many business models are premised on paying too many workers less than a median income.
I know, but Sandy, we see that. We know that it's happened for quite some time. So do the people who struggle through this have to continue to struggle before somebody realizes
I think we
got to change this?
I mean, if you wanted to get historical about it, in 1950, the 10 biggest cities in America were located in the South.
Right, and they're the North.
And the South had something much closer to a rural economy. And what's really happened is that the first third world that we solved for, and I'm not accusing the South of being third world exactly, but the first sector of the world that the northern businesses decided to shift to obtain cheap labor were these the southern part of the United States became habitable because of air conditioning after World War II, and these southern states were actively coming to the North and hustling businesses say, build your factory in Tennessee, build your factory in Mississippi, build your factory down here, because we're going to, number one, organize a process to support financially, make it cheaper for you to build the factory here. We'll give you money to do it. And incidentally, your workers won't necessarily be unionized because we have a right to work state, because they had not had union pressure within their state because they had a rural economy. And so we essentially got the southern part of the United States to be the factor which sort of de-unionized the country. Okay, that was the process, the beginning of de-unionization, and then the globalization followed that. But the first shift was to the south, the next shift was to the border communities of Mexico, and then after that it was Katie bar the door.
All right, let's go to Marty. Thank you very much for waiting, Marty. Marty from Milwaukee. You say what, sir? Good morning, Marty. You there? All right. Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. You say what? I don't know. That doesn't sound right.
That sounds like we're at the moon.
Yeah. Cindy? Let's go to David from San Francisco. David? We got some problems, I guess, on our end. So, guys, hang on. Call back. Yeah, go ahead, David. Hello. Yeah, everybody else call back.
Morning, Earl, Sandy. I was just going to discuss, you were talking unions, and you remember how the insurance companies are pulling out of certain places, because of whether it's climate change or,
right,
utter stupidity.
Flooding.
Now, if you imagine that you live in Florida and they stapled the shingles on your roof, would any insurance company want to deal with a developer that would staple shingles on a roof instead of nailing them down tight? You know, it's hurricane country. So the insurance companies basically like unions because they have apprenticeship programs. They have people. I'm in a union out here in San Francisco, and we have the right to step off of a project if we know they're building it wrong. You know, we have the right to refuse to work for a job that is going out of its way to build it wrong. And if the electricians see that you're going to burn down a booth in the convention center, if the lighting crew were just hired scabs off the street and they hung 20 tons of lighting from a ceiling and they busted and killed conventioneers, the union has the right to refuse to take part in something that's built wrong. And the insurance companies love that because it keeps the rates low. And our convention center doesn't get sued very often because we require that all these jobs are done by union. And so a real conservative wants it done right the first time, and then you don't have all of these patch-ups and repair jobs that come from doing it wrong with scabs. So just from that angle.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It's, Labor Day weekend. So, and Sandy Williams is here. Join the conversation, 844-967-2789.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Are you and your family weather ready?
I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Warm weather, humidity, and thunderstorms in Wisconsin bring mosquitoes that bite and annoy us throughout the spring and summer months.
They're there. They're always there. And then when we have high rainfall years, they're going to be more prevalent.
In fact, the first confirmed case of the West Nile virus has bitten Wisconsin. It was found in a blood donor from Washington County and also in a dead bird in Chippewa County. The West Nile virus is spread to humans, birds, and other animals through the bite of these infected mosquitoes.
Eliminate any water sources. Dump those flower pots out. Don't let dog or kitty pools sit. Fill them when you're going to use them and then dump them out. Clean the gutters. Reduce those sources is definitely going to help. You want to still be able to enjoy your yard.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be.
Who's that?
John Lennon. First album he made after he broke off from the Beatles.
A working class hero is something to be. Wow. And that's...
They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow.
I didn't get that deep into the song.
Anyway, welcome back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday, a Labor Day Friday, in this country. And my co-host, Sandy Williams, and we're talking about labor, and we're talking about all those different things. You can join the conversation, 844-967-2789. Susan from Kenosha, good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
Well, what I say, Errol, is I totally agree with you. I actually am a union person, always have been a union person. I did work jobs that required no union organization. I worked quite a few retail jobs on and off through the years. What I see now is what I've seen in the past. They will now start lowering the wages. They will hire people at a lower wage, and they'll get rid of people who have a higher wage, and that will bring down the medium income once again. And I feel sorry for the people of the United States, because they did not realize when they got rid of these unions, they didn't realize, I think, at the time, how it personally would affect not only themselves, but their children. Because when you got rid of the unions, you also got rid of all the benefits, which included health care. And of course, retirement pay of whatever,
pensions.
It came out of. Pensions were a big deal. I have a pension. You have a pension. Without that pension, I would not be able to exist. And I think that people have to look at this. We have to bring this back. And the people of the United States are hardworking people. And they need to benefit from their hard work. What I see now is a bunch of CEOs who are making millions and millions of dollars off the back of the poor working stiff. And that's all I have.
Well, Susan, you said, likewise, you said a mouthful. Yeah, you absolutely said a mouthful. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Tom, you say what, man?
Good morning. First, happy Labor Day to you guys. And
likewise.
Also, I'm heading to Wisconsin this weekend, so I'm pretty excited about the weather that's upcoming. First off, it should be called not the right to work, but the right to work for less is really what it is.
No question.
The right to work is, again, another one of those words that makes it sound like you have a right to work. No, it's the right to work for less. Race to the bottom. Ronald Reagan brought us this with Petco. Scott Walker brought it to Wisconsin with Act 10.
Yep.
Anything to break down solidarity or democracy in a workplace. That's what a union truly is democracy in a workplace.
And the thing is, people need to realize that they're being played for suckers. I mean, we have more power together than we do alone. And the thing is, that's why the unions need to be strong. But that's the one candidate that's actually bringing about unionization and stands behind union, and that's Harris Walz. And if you want to see everything die, well, I think Rick Wilson said it best, everything Trump touches dies. So, you know, we the people really need to get out and vote in this election. And we really need to push, you know, our Congress people. We need to vote blue up and down the ballot. And we need to really push our Congress people, not demonize them, not demonize Harris either, but push them to the higher tax rates on the billionaire class, you know, Medicare for all. The things, honestly, that Bernie's been talking about forever. Also, one last thing is that remember what happened in Reagan's era. We had Buckley versus Vallejo, which made corporations people, made money free speech. And then you have First National Bank versus Blatty. And then on top of that, you have Citizens United, which brought money into politics. We've got to get money out of politics.
Hey, Tom, agree with you. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, before we go back to the phone lines, one of the things that I do recall distinctly when they were talking about, and this is attack on unions and the assault on unions was taking place, was that the unions, Sandy, put a lot of money in and supported Democrats. I remember that conversation and that the unions, and I remember the unions, and truthfully, the union that I was in did support Democrats, and many of the UAW and the Teamsters and all of them really invested money in Democratic politics. And so part of this attack on unions was because if we could break the back of those unions, the Republicans who were looking at unions in a different light, because the unions had finances and they could put finances, and it became a problem when it came for these elections, Sandy, that Republicans wanted to see unions kind of dismantled because they were giving the money to the Democrats, and the Republicans didn't have reciprocal entities on the other side.
The unionization movement was always the source of a great deal of political conflict, and the Republican Party has always been an anti-union party. They represented the interest of the business owners. The business owners were not interested in being unionized. Wisconsin was the scene of massive union wars. Kohler, Wisconsin, Alice Chalmers, a business that's no longer in existence, but the Kohler Company in Wisconsin was the scene of a long union war that was quite violent, actually. And so there always was this pretty strident pro-union on the Democratic side. In fact, the Dixiecrat Party was the odd bedfellow, was a fusion of the Southern Jim Crow Democrats and the Northern unionized Democrats. That was the union of the Dixiecrats. And the Republicans were anti-union. And so, yeah, this has been in existence for a long time. But I think the sorry thing is, and the business owners are now getting the downside of having a whole bunch of people in the United States earning incomes that do not get them into the middle class, okay? And that the middle class is a two-income kind of a household that's built on business models of unsustainably low incomes. And they're going to pay the price.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. Hang on, guys. We'll come right back to you. 844-967-2789 is Friday as we move into Labor Day.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's Fish and Wildlife Fund will be audited. People pay into the fund and they get hunting and fishing licenses. The audit will address concerns about how the Department of Natural Resources spends that money. Lawmakers on the Legislative Audit Committee say all of it should be earmarked for hunting, fishing, and conservation. A thoughtful approach to everything from watering your lawn to brushing your teeth can help save water. So says conservationist Danny Quissel.
Being mindful on when we're letting the tap run, where you're filling a pitcher and then you walk away for a minute to go let the dog out or something. Keeping in mind, you know, that water is running over and right down the drain.
Quissel is urging state and local governments to better monitor water use. This week is World Water Week. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is considering the sale of 80,000 acres of school trust land in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. According to a Northern News Now report, the wilderness area has millions of acres of land that are controlled by the United States Forest Service, but some plots of land had been set aside to generate income for Minnesota public schools. The Department of Natural Resources is now considering transferring that 80,000 acres of school trust land to the United States Forest Service. Northwest Wisconsin residents have continued to speak out against the relocation project for Enbridge Energy's Line 5 pipeline. According to a Fox 21 report, the company has proposed to relocate a 41-mile-long portion of the pipeline around the reservation of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Some are calling for a complete shutdown of the pipeline, saying rerouting it would impact hundreds of wetlands and streams. Supporters say the project would bring in union jobs and millions into the local economy. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Are you tired of hearing about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift? Adam Sandler isn't. He's giddy about the power couple to the point where it sounds like he has an actual couple crush. No word on who he is more smitten with, Kelce or Swift. The comedian told the Kelce brothers on their New Heights podcast that his whole family loves the couple to the point where when Sandler is around Swift, he gets nervous because he doesn't want to blow it for his daughters. Speaking of Sandler, he does sound like a good friend to his pal Rob Schneider. Schneider says Sandler has called him every week for the last 30 years just to check in on him. Schneider says he's not sure when asked if he would be part of Sandler's recently announced Happy Gilmore 2, but he told People that he loves Sandler and wants him to be happy and healthy. Sounds like Schneider really wants a part in Sandler's new film, or he's hoping that his friend falls out of love with Kelce and Swift so they can finally be together. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
We are headed into an absolutely fantastic Labor Day weekend today. Sunshine, upper 70s this afternoon, tonight into the mid-50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, low 80s, and then sunshine, highs in the low to mid-70s on Sunday and Labor Day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 59.
Protect your livelihood with a livestock risk protection policy through Ag Country Farm Credit Services. With an LRP policy, you're covered if the market price unexpectedly drops for fed cattle, feeder cattle, or swine. Coverage options range from 70 to 100%. Get an LRP policy from a team that knows agriculture. Contact your local Ag Country office to learn more. Ag Country. Focused on ag. Focused on you. Ag Country is an equal opportunity lender and provider.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes, just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer, the founder of the Recombobulation Area and political editor of Civic Media, joins us at 10:30. Be here.
Matt and Air on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left and took all of the reasons working for. You better not try to stand in my
All right, welcome back. Who is that?
Johnny Paycheck. It's the only big hitty. He was a one-hit wonder.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. You know, it's Labor Day weekend, and we can best support it by having this conversation and dialogue. Thank all of you in the audience who've joined us, you know, and Sandy for taking us down that path. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thank you for taking my call. Anytime, anywhere, Sandy.
The last time you said that, he defrocked you, I think. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, you could even moderate. You could shut my mic off. You could shut his mic off.
CJ, let me just say, CJ, it's not going to happen, okay? It's not going to happen. Let's just stop with all that.
Go ahead, CJ.
You're afraid of me. That's why you guys shut my mic off. You never let me respond.
No, because you don't respond.
I am afraid of you.
Yeah, because you don't respond to the questions. Like now, you're going to say something completely different than the subject matter that we're on. I guarantee you.
Well, not really. No.
Oh, not really. Okay, go ahead.
Because I'm a union.
I know.
Man.
I've heard
I'm
that.
I'm a member of three unions.
I've heard that.
And very proud of it.
Okay.
But you live in a city that there's a difference between public and private unions, and your public unions, are different, and they broke your city. That's why you're paying a sales tax that you are.
Hold on. See, this is why I am going to cut you off, because to say there's a difference between the public and private unions, and it's okay for the public unions. To continue to get benefits and continue to get raises, but the private unions don't. That statement is ridiculous. On its face, and for a person who's supposedly a union person to say that, it's hard for me to respect that.
My private union has gotten raises, and they are.
You said the public union. There's a difference between that and the private union, and it's the private unions that broke the city. That's what you said.
No, the public union.
The public union, yeah, the public unions that broke the city.
They did. They had a lot of unfunded pensions, right, Earl?
Wait a minute, though. Who funds the pensions? It's the city that funds the pensions, not the union. I mean, you know, there was a negotiation, and the politicians might have failed to negotiate as well as they could have, but I don't know what you're saying. I don't understand how it is that you can lay that at the feet of the union.
The union
existed. They collectively bargained and got themselves a bargain, which was apparently the city was unwilling to fund.
So how come it's okay for the police and fire unions, and you don't say that?
Sandy, that's the point.
No. CJ, how come you don't say that about the police and fire unions? They're unions.
You spoke, Earl, about the Democrats supporting unions. Well, the Democrats are going to destroy the unions by letting millions, tens of millions, illegals. What do you think that's going to do to
the okay, unions? Thank you very much for the call. That's nonsense. Let's go to Cassandra. Good morning to you, Cassandra. You say what?
Well, and Sandy, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question for Sandy regarding the boards. Many of these boards that the
major
CEOs
corporations, yeah,
yes, reside over, and that is what happens at many of these board meetings. Do they have discussions about pricing, about the threshold that the consumer can bear, and Sandy, what do you think, or what could you propose for remedy some of the problems that the American people are encountering regarding in terms of, I don't want to use the word regulating, but improving the outcome for the American workers, because something is happening at these board meetings where they are not where they are receiving governmental largesse in the forms of tax benefits and subsidies, but the American people, they are not reaping the benefits for what they are giving corporations in terms of reduction in taxes, also deductions and other favorable tax policies. I hope my question makes sense.
Yeah, thanks, it does, and it's a great question, Cassandra. Thank you.
Well, you know, each company operates in its own little microcosm, and a company shouldn't be able to control prices. The market should control prices. So if you're on the board of directors of a company that's involved in a competitive marketplace, the price you can charge for your product is determined not just by your company, but it's determined by all of your competitors, presuming that there is competition. One of the problems we have in the United States is that many of the industries in the United States have become over-consolidated. The antitrust division of the American government was sort of put to sleep in the 1980s and has been moribund, or at least somnolent, meaning sleepy, for a long time. And as a result, we don't really have the kind of competition we should in the grocery industry and a bunch of other industries. And so boards of directors don't tend to set prices. They tend to look at the business results that the company is achieving that's presented to them by the management, and they try to figure out whether the management is doing an adequate job of obtaining results. But if the marketplace allows that company to charge excessive prices such that they earn profits for which the directors will congratulate the management about, it's really not the fault of the company. It's the fault of the oversight of the marketplace that has allowed that company to have the market power to earn excessive profits. You ask about the taxes. That's a question of public policy and the government's foolishness in terms of, for instance, the Trump tax reduction, which was sold as being something that would vastly increase the amount of investment that companies would carry out in their businesses, which would translate into economic benefits going down the chain, new jobs because of the investments that would result in enlarged businesses, as well as secondary businesses that would be supplying that company with the goods that they would be investing in. But that didn't happen because there weren't that many investment opportunities to match the amount of cash that was generated by the new tax law. And so what did the companies do? They bought back stock, which was a way for them to improve earnings per share without investing in the business, but rather reducing the numbers of shares outstanding. And the buyback kind of frenzy that has occurred over time is really just a function of the fact that businesses don't have as many good places to invest money that will result in returns which will increase their earnings per share. And the better option they have is to buy back shares, reduce the earnings per share, and increase their earnings per share by simply having fewer shares outstanding because of the buyback. So, you know, the government needs to be smarter than it's been, particularly, I think, on the side of this, all of the tax benefits that have been flowing to business, number one. Number two, in order for the workers to share in the benefits, we need to make sure that workers are earning livable wages, okay, and that we can't allow businesses to build their business models on the notion that the business model is premised on paying unlivable wages to the workers. Because if a business model is premised on paying unlivable wages to the workers, then my proposition is that isn't a business model. That isn't a business model that can endure. Okay, it's not a sustainable business model. And too many businesses in the United States, particularly in the fast food industry and elsewhere, have been premised now on being heavily employee dependent and dependent on employees that themselves do not earn livable wages.
So, Sandy, again, when are they going to make that determination? What's going to get the business?
Now, who's
the
they?
Businesses?
Well, the
you
business,
said
the
who have this model that they've seen and that they've had and been following that has had this impact on.
Well, businesses will follow models because they can. Okay,
I know, but I'm saying
the fact that they can is a function of what's not just ethical, but what is permitted.
Okay.
And so minimum wage has become much more important in an economy in which many, many people are earning wages which are scaled against the minimum wage, and in which they are being asked to work less than full time, and so that they are working and they are hourly workers without benefits. Okay, we have far too many hourly workers without benefits in the United States economy. Far too many.
All right, let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Don. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. I want to try to stay on topics. I think the topic was unions. But anyhow, you kind of touched on it a little bit. There has been a gradual war against unions. You touched on it a little bit when it started. They had factories migrate down south. Then after that, then the bipartisan bill started coming in. Jimmy Carter signed the Motor Truck Act in 1980. Well, that killed a lot of good-paying jobs. Then after that, you had in the 90s, things were booming under Clinton, but then he turned around and he took Democrat labor union money, but he turned around and stabbed us in the back and signed the NAFTA bill, even though that little guy, what was his name? He looked like Howdy Doody.
Ross Perot?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right. Ross Perot. Everybody laughed at him, but you know, he said right out, if you pass this, Bush was for it. Clinton signed the bill. He said, you're going to wreck the economy in the U.S. And he was right. And then, of course, you got to realize, too, you know, you did bring up, Earl, about the South. Jimmy Carter, good man, but he was from down south. Bill Clinton, he was from down south. You know, they took Democratic money from the labor unions, but they sure were instrumental in destroying unions. And I'll tell you, the real nail in the coffin is when Act 10 by Scott Walker was implemented, so.
Yeah, well, that's here in the state of Wisconsin. You're right. Hey, Don, you're right. Thank you very much. Good stuff. Brendan, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Sandy, could you remind our friend what the outline for Project 2025 for labor is?
Well, yeah. I mean,
listen, we'll give him a chance on the other side. Brendan, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Regular SOB and the line boss, he's a fool. He got himself a brand new flat top haircut. Lord, he really thinks that's cool. One of these days I'm gonna blow my top and there's gonna be hell to pay. I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't a working here no more. My woman done left and took all of the reasons I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way when I walk out the door. Take this job and shove it.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
When you think about Labor Day and what it means, do you think about Wisconsin? You should, but let's go back to explain. In the mid-1800s, activists pushed for a day to recognize workers' contributions. President Grover Cleveland signed a law in 1894, making the first Monday of every September a national holiday. So where did the first labor union form in Wisconsin? Wausau? Green Bay, Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The Badger State has an impressive history. Bricklayers and carpenters formed unions in the 1840s and were the first to push for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance. Now, did you guess? This all happened first in Milwaukee. The state's labor unions formed in 1847. The National Labor Union didn't form until 1866, 19 years later. Leading the way for other states is this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. I'm going to be down at Labor Fest on Monday, Labor Day, from about 9 o'clock to about 3 or 4 o'clock. And I may get the chance to interview the
vice presidential
candidate.
Tim Walz.
Yeah, I think I will get this is a good chance that I'm going to have the opportunity to interview him. But, you know, Sandy, the unions and what has happened to the unions. And the unions, Sandy, I remember.
Well, you know, there is a bit of a comeback to unions. German automobile manufacturers that went to South Carolina, for instance, have now found their plants becoming unionized. One of the reasons that the South was attractive to all those foreign automobile manufacturers coming in was that they were non-unionized. But you know, Germany, for instance, has a requirement that a union member be on the board of directors of each of the businesses. And most of Europe is happily unionized, right? It's a part of the fabric of their business. I just wanted to make sure that I could mention at a speech recently that J.D. Vance was giving to the Firefighters Union, he proudly told them, he said, you know, President Trump and I are more pro-worker than any Republican that's ever run before. First of all, that'd be a very low bar. But secondly, he's talking about Donald Trump, who just 2 weeks ago in his Elon Musk interview congratulated Elon Musk for firing the workers who were had the temerity to begin to organize. And, you know, first of all, that is illegal under the federal Labor Rights Act. But secondly, that's hardly pro-worker, okay? Donald Trump has never exhibited pro-worker capacity in his own employees. He's had a substantial number of service employees. I think you could take a survey of them to find out just how pro-worker Donald Trump has been.
But, Sandy, you can't talk about doing away with the National Labor Relations Board and say you're pro-union.
Right.
Part of what they're talking about is doing away with the Republicans. They want to do away with the National Labor Relations Board.
Yeah, Project 2025 basically wants to deep six everything that the government does to protect workers and the workers' rights to organize and to evaluate the fairness of the processes that are carried out by business. You know, there's been a long-standing friction. It's inconvenient for a business to be unionized. That doesn't mean that a unionized business is going to be less successful than a unionized business, but it's inconvenient. It's easier not to be unionized. At least businesses think that. The fact is that in a large business, many times it's probably easier to be unionized. You've got one focal point to talk to deal with your labor relations. But that's sort of the flip side.
Well, here's a prime example. I don't know which airlines it is. Maybe is American Airlines still around?
Oh, yeah.
Well, American Airlines is talking about going on strike towards the end of the year if they don't get some raises. And so, yes, it's an inconvenience. Yes, it brings pressure on American Airlines. But if they didn't have the power to strike, or if they didn't have the power to say, hey, should we just rely on, you know, the company to say, okay, well, hey, let's give everybody a raise? Well, come on, Sandy. The company's not going to sit around and make a decision that we're going to just give everybody in American Airlines a raise. I don't know when is the last time they had one, but this is part of what unions do, and it is what angers employers, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
but it's the only tool they have.
Right. I mean, you know, the fact is that smaller companies that are company-owned, that are family-owned, that are quite small, maybe the employees are viewed and are understood by the management to be a significant and integral part of the operation. Many small companies have profit sharing and other things to try and harmonize. But when you have a company that has thousands of employees, they all become faceless, okay, as far as management is concerned. And the process for those people to secure fair wages, for instance, is very, very difficult unless the enterprise that they're working in is working in an industry that has a shortage of workers. If there's a shortage of workers, businesses suddenly realize the importance of workers and they start paying, signing bonuses or advertising higher salaries because that's what it takes to attract workers. But if you're not in such an industry, if you're not in an industry where workers are short, then there's very little leverage on the part of a worker who works for a business that has thousands of employees.
So part of the impact that the unions used to have back when I was a young man was other non-union companies had to pay a higher wage.
Sure.
Because the union workers were making this, they had to pay something.
I mean, that's why I said that in manufacturing space in the United States, there's some discipline imposed in the manufacturing space that relates to union wages, because the company will get unionized if it isn't paying wages that are satisfactorily close to what could be achieved in a unionized space. So the unions are a specter that are important, even in the ununionized space, in an industry that involves unionization. But if you're a McDonald's employee, how much leverage do you have?
None.
Okay. and there's no one to point at to say you got to pay more to attract workers because, you know, it's an unskilled job or Walmart. Like I said, Walmart has turnover of 200%. They don't care who the individual is. They just have to fill the job. They have to fill the role with somebody, and that somebody just has to be there.
And there's an endless number of somebody, right?
Yeah.
All right. Man, thank you very much, Sandy. It was a great conversation as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. Enjoy the selection of music. Again, I'll be at Labor Fest, and so look for that most of next week. Hey, Calvin, thank you as always for a great week. We got to get out of here. Up next, Greg Bott, sitting in for Jane Madnier. Have a great Labor Day.
Gold, greater than the might of atoms, magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Jeff Mitchell, who will tell us all we need to know about the Northeast Wisconsin Old Fashioned Fest. And it's a bar band Friday night as Terry Barr from Max Inc. Radio drops by with new music.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9. It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.